Okay, we're going to start here from the two dots on the top of Yud Bet Amud Aleph. So the Mishnah, we have the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir arguing about the status of an Eved, whether it's a Chovah or is it a Zchut for the Eved to be freed. So the Chachamim say it is a Zchut for him to be freed because there's no downside for the Eved. Rabbi Meir claims the downside for the Eved is that he's going to lose out on Mizonot. Chachamim say that's not a loss because that he has the right not to give mizonot to his Eved. Meaning that he can set up a structure in which the Eved works for him, and he does not feed him. That means that the Adon is not really responsible for his mizonot, and if he frees him, and now he doesn't get mizonot, he wasn't entitled to them beforehand anyway. And so that's why they say it's not a chovah. Shmat mina. So from here you can conclude, Yochol Arav lomar le'Eved, a master can set up a relationship with a slave. Aseimi veinizancha. You work for me, and I'm not feeding you. So that's the structure upon which the Chachamim's position is built. Since that relationship can't exist, that means that the Eved has no entitlement to mizonot. He doesn't have entitlement to mizonot. When he loses those mizonot, he's not losing a right, because it wasn't his right to start with. Hacha b'mayaskinan. So what we could do to say that that's not the case, Damalei, say masei adecha lemizonotecha. That's not what the Mishnah means. The Mishnah doesn't mean that you can set up a structure by which the Eved's going to work for the Adon and he won't give him his mizonot, but rather, it's a case where the Adon says to him, use your masei adayim to pay for your own mizonot. He's saying, you take care of yourself. Dekavata gabi isha. So then what would be the equivalent case by a woman? Damalei, say masei adayich bimizonotayich. That your work should pay for your own mizonot. So, am isha amai lo. So why does the woman not work? Now, the truth is that we've seen in the Gemara and Yevamot and Ketubot that there's a machloket as to whose decision is it. Is it the husband's right to make that decision, or is it the woman's right to make that decision? Over here, the Gemara is assuming that it's the husband's right to make that decision. And in doing so, what the husband can say to the woman is, take your masei adayim and use your mizonot. The Chachamim in the Mishnah contrasted an Eved to a woman. They say an Eved, he can make such a condition, or he can stipulate that he's not going to get mizonot. By a woman, he can't do that. But if you're telling me that the stipulation in the Mishnah is not what we said before, that he can create a situation in which he works for him and he doesn't pay him mizonot, but rather it's a case where he says, you pay for yourself, do your own work and you pay for yourself, he can do the same thing with the woman, with his wife. And if that's the case, what's the distinction between them? Mar says, Isha b'delo safko. It's a case where she doesn't have sufficient masei yadayim to get to the amount that she needs. Eved nami b'delo safik. Why don't you say the same thing by the Eved? The Eved doesn't have enough. His masei yadayim don't make up. It says, well, there's a difference in that relationship. Avda d'hum karsei lo shavya l'mar'ei ul'mar'atei l'may mitbay. A Eved whose work or value does not exceed the amount he eats, then why does his master or mistress want to keep him around? What are they going to pay him for? The view here is Eved as property, and Eved Kanani is viewed as property. And the same way that you have an animal, that if it eats more than it produces, you're not going to keep the animal around. In the same manner, in terms of a monetary view of the Eved, I'm not saying that he's an animal, but I'm saying if you view him as property, then the same thing will apply by an Eved, which is, if his value or if his production does not equal the amount that he consumes or that he eats, then why keep him around? It's just a money-losing proposition for you, and they're not going to feed him in that case. He can't ask them to feed him in that instance. As opposed to an Isha, where the relationship has nothing to do with monetary value, has to do with his obligation to provide mizonot for his wife. And if her masei adayim do not equal up to her mizonot, she's entitled to mizonot from the ketubah. And he can't just pull the plug and say, you're not worth it. That's not the relationship between a husband and a wife. And that will be the difference between them. So the Gemara says that our Mishnah does not automatically lead you to the conclusion that a master can say to his Eved, we're going to set up a relationship where you don't get mizonot. Because we can explain our Mishnah in a different manner. We can explain the Mishnah as a case where he's saying, trade off your masei adayim for your mizonot, take care of yourself. Says it to the Eved, he says it to the woman. In both cases, there's not sufficient masei adayim to get mizonot. In the case of the Eved, he doesn't have to make up the shortfall, because that's the nature of property or ownership, which is, if you can't make your own ends meet, then there's no reason I should be paying you and losing money on you. On the other hand, for Isha, the monetary considerations aren't relevant. It's all about his obligation to supply mizonot to his wife, and he'll have to supply them irrespective of whether her masei yadayim equal her mizonot or not. That's part of the Tanai Ketubah. Your question is a relevant question, which is when the Gemara proposes over here that the Adon, the master, does not have to feed his Eved, why is it that the master does not have to feed his Eved? You could argue that an Eved is not entitled to mizonot. Fundamentally, an Eved is not entitled to mizonot. If the Adon gives a mizonot that's out of the generosity of his heart, there is no obligation of mizonot on the Adon. That's one way that you can view this. And if that's the case, there is no obligation, and anything that he gives him is in exchange for his work, or because he's being nice to him and keep him around and keep him productive, whatever the reasons are, but that is not an obligation. And that's how you can view this concept, that he can make a deal with the Eved that you work, and I'm not going to give you mizonot. That's one possibility. Or the other possibility is that the Adon does have an obligation to give him mizonot, but since he is the master of the slave, he can make a determination about what happens to the slave or what he does. And he can basically say to him, listen, as your master, I want you to go door to door and collect food, and that's how you're going to eat, and then I'm not going to pay your mizonot. So question is the fundamental obligation not exist, which is one possibility, and then that would answer your question, doesn't he have to take care of him? The answer is no. On the other hand, it might be that he has, as the master, can determine his fate as to how he gets his mizonot. And yes, he's obligated to mizonot, but it doesn't necessarily have to be through him. He can say to him, go around and collect. Go around and ask people to give you mizonot and beg for your mizonot. Now, seemingly, if the master is wealthy, then we're going to say to the master, you got to pay the mizonot of the Eved, because with regards to tzedakah, we always have a principle, that you can't let your family or the people that are closest to you go by the wayside and then give tzedakah to people who are not as close or related to you. So just from that perspective, if the Ashir is giving out tzedakah and he has an Eved, how could it be that he overlooks his Eved and gives tzedakah to other people? So from that standpoint, it's seemingly the master would have to give mizonot to his Eved, not mitzad chuvah, but mitzad tzedakah, that he'd have to take care of his Eved. Here we're talking about someone who maybe can't afford it, or someone who is not giving tzedakah otherwise. Then in those situations, what are the obligations of the Adon to the Eved? And if you say that there is no obligation in terms of mizonot, how do you formulate it, which is what we just said now? There are two ways to look at it. Either he's not obligated whatsoever, or he can determine how he gets his mizonot, and he can tell him, go beg, which we're going to see in a second. The Gemara is going to say something along those lines. Tashma, Eved she'gala la'rei miklat, an Eved Kenani who kills b'shogeg now needs to run to ir miklat. Ein ra'bo chayav lizono. His master does not have to feed him over there. V'lo'od, el she'maseya dav l'rabo. Not only does he not have to feed him, but he still is owned by the master, and his production belongs to the master. Shma mina. From this, you clearly see a separation between the two issues, which is, Yachol Rav Lomar Le'Eved, Asei Mi Vein Izancha, that he can say to him, listen, you work, I'm going to take that productivity, and I'm not going to feed you. That's the outcome when he goes to the Ir Miklat. When he goes to the Ir Miklat, the master collects all the output of the Eved, but he doesn't have to feed him, he doesn't have to take care of him. Now, it's the same thing like we said before, like in our Mishnah. It's a case where he tells him, you pay for your own mizonot. Take your productivity and eat your mizonot. Wait a minute. Didn't you just say here in the Braita that he does get the masidam, he gets the productivity? How could he get the productivity if he told him that you're going to use your productivity to pay for your own mizonot? Lahadafa, that excess. Whatever is in excess of his mizonot, then the owner gets to keep that. Where it says, hadafa pshita. Hadafa, there's no chiddush in hadafa because he is the slave of this individual. And why would you have a hava? I mean, anything a slave owns or does is to the benefit of his master. So of course, if his masei yadayim exceed his mizonot, he doesn't have any private ownership where he's going to keep the value that exceeds the mizonot. That doesn't make any sense. The only way to have hadafa is to go to the master. So when it says, no, ma'adu tevna. As Rashi says here, if he has a deficit in his masei yadayim and he doesn't get the mizonot, the Adon does not have to make up that deficit. So in 1 week, he doesn't have enough masei yadayim to get the mizonot. He can't come back to the master and say, give me mizonot to fill in the deficit. So then, ki itle, nami lo lishkominei. So then when he has excess, we're not going to take it from him. What we're basically saying is that it'll balance out over the year. Maybe he should be able to keep the hadafa so that it balances out. When he has a deficit, then the excess could fill in where he has a deficit. So Shva Minah, the Kamash Malan, is no, that's not the case. Even though he has shortfalls sometimes and he doesn't get it made up, when he has excess, it still goes to the Adon. And that's the Chiddush over there about the Hadafa. But once again, you can't prove from this that you can have a relationship with an Eved where you say, you're mine and all your output is mine, but no Mizonot. Where it says, if that's the case, if you're telling us this is basically about a relationship between an Adon and a slave, then it's not relevant about the Ir Miklat. This is any Adon, any master can say to his slave, use your Masi Adayim and you get your Mizonot. And all of this would be true. He wouldn't have to make up the deficits. And if he has Hadafa, if he has excess, it would go to the Adon. So, Maishnal Ari Miklat. What's unique about an Ir Miklat? Why is the case about an Ir Miklat? So, Salkadat Chamino V'chai. We would have thought that the Pasuk says, V'nas Elachat Ari Ma'el V'chai, that he will run away to one of these Ari Miklats and he will live. Avdilei Chiyuta Tvei. You should make sure that he has a proper life over there, or that he's able to live, Kamash Malan, that despite that fact, he still does not have to give the Hadafa to the Eved. Meaning that there's an obligation of V'chai, an obligation that we would have thought might have devolved upon the Adon as well, on the master himself, which is questionable. I mean, the Gemara's question as a whole is interesting, because V'chai is not a direct responsibility on the Adon, it's a responsibility on all of Klal Yisrael to ensure those people that live in the Arei Miklat have a means of making a living and have a way to provide for themselves. They can't go to the Ir Miklat and die, because then, in essence, that makes it that killing B'Shogeg is the same thing as killing B'Mezid, which is it's a death sentence. So if going to the Ir Miklat is sure death for the individual, so he's going to starve to death or he's not going to be taken care of, then the Ir Miklat is a sentence to death. So B'chai says there's an obligation to provide and make sure those people that are in the Ir Miklat have a way or means by which to survive and to live normal lives inside of the Ir Miklat. So you would have thought that that applies to the master-Eved relationship as well. And because of that, he would also have to now provide for him when there are deficits and not take his excess when there is excess. Kamash Malan, that is not the case. That V'chai Behem does not obligate the master in that way. It says, V'ab Mektani Seifa. But doesn't it say in the Seifa, Aval Isha Shegalta La'arei Miklat Bala Chayav Mizonoteha. The later half that says, that's true by an Eved. But in contrast, for a wife, that's not true. And that, with regards to a wife, he's got to pay the Mizonot. Michlau, Delo Amarla. That makes it sound like he didn't make the deal with her that you do your Masi Yadayim and get Mizonot. Otherwise, why is he obligated to provide Mizonot to this woman? If her husband had made the deal, then he's not responsible for a Mizonot anymore. And if the Seifa is a case where he didn't make that deal with the woman, then the Reisha is also a case where he didn't make that deal with the Eved. And despite that fact, he does not have to provide Mizonot. That shows you, you can't have a deal where the Adon takes all the output of the Eved and provides no Mizonot to the Eved, because now we're talking about core Mizonot. It says, no, Olam da Amarle. No, it's a case where he does have that deal. Fisha, b'dolo safko. But it's a case by the woman where she doesn't have sufficient means through her Masei Yadayim in order to get to her full Mizonot. So then we saw this before, that when there is a deficit by the Eved, he doesn't have the obligation to make up the deficit. When there's a deficit by his wife, he does have an obligation to make up the deficit, because that's his chiyuv in the ketubah to make sure that his wife has mizanot. Where it says, v'amiktani seifa, v'imamar la, tzi ma'ase yadayach mizanotayich. If the latter part of that braita, even further down, it says, if he says to her, tzi ma'ase yadayach mizanotayich, rashai, it's mutar, michal d'resha d'lo amamar. That means the cases before are cases where he did not make that deal. So if that's the case, what is the Chiddush over here? If he said it in the latter half, and he said it in the first half, that means that all through this Braita, it's all saying the same thing. That Suma Seyedayich Bemizonotayich. Why does it only introduce that later on in the Braita? Hachikamar. Ve'im Misapeket. If there's sufficient means, V'amalat Suma Seyedayich Bemizonotayich, Rashai. Then he is Mutar. That, it's a continuation of the previous statement. The previous statement was tumaseyadach mizonotayach, and there's not sufficient means to do it. Since there aren't sufficient means, he has to make up the deficit. But if there are sufficient production in her maseyadayim to feed herself, he's allowed to do that, and he's off the hook. So where it says misapeket maila memra, what type of chiddush is that? That if she has sufficient means within her maseyadayim, that he can say to her, use your maseyadayim and get your mizonot. He could do that when she's at home. Even when he's married to her, he can say that. So now that she's in an ir miklat, why should that change the din versus when she's at home? The same thing should apply. What's the chiddush that you need to tell us? He can make such a deal with his wife, or tell his wife that that's going to be the situation in ir miklat, any more so than when he's at home. So it says, mahu detema. I would have thought, kol kvuda bat melech pnima, that the honor of a princess is inward. Kamash v'lan, that governor over here. Kol kvuda bat melech pnima is a term or a concept that is used by the Gemara to explain that there are different roles in Jewish life, different roles between men and women. And the woman's role of being in the house is not any less than the man's role being out in the world making a parnosa, but her role in being in the house is kvoda. That is the thing that gives her honor, and that is the place where, in a sense, I'm going to say, quote-unquote, she belongs, not in a pejorative sense. Oh, she shouldn't be seen out in public. But more that her kingdom is the house and not the outside world. And so the Gemara here says that you have an issue. Rashi already addresses some of these issues. It says, kol kvuda bat melech. It's only talking about a princess who says we're talking about a regular Jewish woman. It says, kol Yisrael b'nei melachim. Quotes the terminology that's used in the Mishnayot in Shabbat a number of times, which is that all b'nei Yisrael are considered to be b'nei melachim, or princes and princesses. Right? They're very much the underlying concept in Chassidut, that everybody, even the most pashut of Israel, is considered to be a ben melech. So because of that, this pasuk is applicable to her as well. Number two is pnima. What does that mean, pnima? Snua. Pnima doesn't necessarily mean inside, but it means a behavior of tzniut. And that the tzniut itself is the kavod. Ve'ein darka letzeit ulesavev ba'ir she'ena misham. Rashi says it's not the way of a woman when she goes to a new city to be wandering around the city all alone looking for work, asking people for work. And they don't know her to bring the work to her house. Unless she starts going around the city and soliciting work. In order to get work to make a living. So in the case here, the woman is going to work when she's at home. So that's number one. The Gemara is not saying the woman doesn't work. But it's a work that she can do at home, which is the ability of a mother to have her household, be in the house, bring up her family, but still work. So she has work from home. And that happens when she's inside of a city that she is familiar with, either because people know, and the word of mouth, they bring the work to her in her house, or because she has a husband or a father who can solicit the work on her behalf, or tell people to bring the work to her. Here, she's in ir miklat. She's in a foreign city. Nobody, she doesn't have family there. There's nobody there with her. So now the only way for her to solicit work is to go out and get the work. So you would have thought that husband cannot make that deal anymore with her. To maseyadayach mizonotayach, he doesn't have the right to do that because that would be bugeya in her kol kvuda bat melech pnima. The kamash malan is that he still, if she has the ability to do it, he still has a right to demand of her, even though in some senses that will lower her kavod or not afford her to be as sanua as she would be at home. Now, here you have a certain amount of tension, because remember before we said the Bechai applies by the ir miklat, which you have to make sure that a person has the life or the ability to survive in the ir miklat. On the other hand, going to the ir miklat is not necessarily a party. The person is going to the ir miklat because they killed Bishogeg. So you have a balance, and the Mishnayot in Makot discuss this, and the Gemara in other places, as to the necessity for someone as an ir miklat to refuse to take kavod. I mean that if they try to give him a position of kavod, to make give him an aliyah l'torah, give him kavod, he should try to deny it. He should say no. If they say, even so, we want to give it to you, then he can go through with it. But there is a certain amount of humility that has to come with being put to an ir miklat. Galut is a punishment. It's not a reward. And so galut has to feel, in a sense, like a punishment. Not to the extent that it goes down to the livelihood of the individual, the ability to live. But on the other hand, there is a certain amount of kavod that is lost. And you see that here in this Gemara, which is, B'chai demands that you don't allow the person to starve, and you don't have them go without a means to live. On the other hand, if it comes to Kol Kvudah Bat Melech Pnima, which would definitely be the dictating principle when she was at home, when she goes to Ir Miklat, it no longer is the dictating principle, and she loses some of that Kvudah Bat Melech Pnima, because, again, that's the idea of Galut, or going to Ir Miklat, is that life is not as pleasant or as nice as it was when you were at home. Gemara says, Lema Kitanae. Let us say that this issue is a Machloket Tanaim, as to whether the Adon could make this deal with his Eved to not pay him mizonot. Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel Omer, Yochola Eved Omar L'Rabo, Bishnei Batzoret. An Eved can say to his master during years of famine, O Parniseni, O Hotzieni L'Cherut. Either take care of me, or free me, so that I can take care of myself. If you're not going to take care of me, I got to be able to take care of myself. So the choices are, either feed me, or let me go free. Chumim omrim, chumim say, harishut biyad rabo. The master makes those decisions, not the evit. My love, bahai kamiflige. Maybe this is their machloket. The mar savar yachol. Mar savar means the chachamim believe that he has the ability to deny him mizonot. He says, the masei daim remind, the mizonot are your problem. And that's why he can say to him, it's my choice. You're not going free because it's my choice. Umar Savar in a Yachol. And Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says you don't have a right to do that. And that's why the Eved can put it to him, either free me or Parnaseni, take care of me. This is where Tosafot says it. Ragtani Otsieni the Cherut Lav Davka. Doesn't mean free me. That's me, Kamola Ben Chorin. It's not literally saying you have to free me. He's just saying, either you take care of me with my mizonot, or you have to let me use my masei yadayim to get my mizonot. You can't deny me that right. What does that have to do with going free? A free man can determine what he does with his masei yadayim, with his own parnosa. So it's not that he literally frees him, but he gives him the rights like a free person to make that decision. That would indicate that we have a machloket here as to whether the master has a right to have this type of relationship with his eved. Mar says, v'tizbara, is that really the right explanation? Hai oporniseni ohotzieni lecherut. That's not the right terminology should be used. O parnaseni, o tainli maseyadai, but parnasatimi baile. Exactly what Tosfot says in the end is the explanation of those words. Then that's what the Gemara says should have been said. Not literally go free. It should be say, either you take care of me, or give me maseyadai so I can take care of myself. Va'od, maishna b'shnei batzoret. If the machloket is so fundamental about the relationship between the Adon and the Eved, then why is it particular to years of famine? It should be true in any year. Any year where the Eved can't support himself and get mizonot, he should be able to make a demand of his Adon. Either you feed me, or give me my masei yadayim so I can feed myself. If that's what Rabban Shimon Gamliel believes, then it's true any year. And for the Chachamim, it's true any year as well. Ela, hachav mayaskinan. Now, this is the machloket here between the Tanaim. Damar lo tsei masei yadecha lemizonotecha. He says, listen, this is our deal. You pay for yourself. You use your masei yadayim, you pay for your own mizonot. Ubishnei batzoret lo sapek. In the years of famine, it doesn't work out. In that in normal years, he can produce enough where he can take care of his mizonot. When it comes to famine years, he's just not going to produce enough to get to his mizonot. So Rav Shimon Gamliel savar, o parniseni, o otzieni lecherut. In that case, he says, listen, either you make up the shortfall for me, or you free me. Why? Keheki dechazu li'inche umrachamin alai. So that people see me, and they'll have rachamim on me, and they'll give me tzedakah. We'll see in a second why. Rabbanan savrei, mandem rachema bnei chare. Whoever is merciful on free people, meaning that they give tzedakah to Jews, Eved Nami Ruchumim Rachim, they'll also give it to an Eved Kenani. Their machloket revolves around how people view an Eved Kenani. Do people view it, Eved Kenani, as someone who is almost a foreigner, an outsider? And so because of that, they will not give tzedakah to the Eved Kenani, partly because they view him as an outsider, partly probably they view him as a responsibility of its owner. But either way, they don't view an Eved Kenani as the address for giving tzedakah, or do they view an Eved Kenani on par with anybody else from Israel? Because he's chayav in mitzvot ki isha, and so maybe in that case, they'll give tzedakah. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, people are not going to give tzedakah to an Eved Kenani. So you're putting him in a position where he's going to starve to death, because his masei yadayim don't equal his needs in mizonot, and now you're not giving him an option. So he says to him, either you give me the deficit or let me go free so I can go beg and get food for what I need. But the Chachamim say that's not true. If he needs to beg, he'll beg and he'll get food because people will give to him just like they give to any on Israel. Now, what's different about Shnei Batzoret then? You still have that question. The answer is because by Shnei Batzoret, people are much more stingy in their tzedakah. Everybody has a shortfall during a famine year. If everybody has a shortfall, they're going to give out tzedakah in a much more measured manner. And so the Eved Kenani will be the casualty of that. In years of plentiful, they'll give tzedakah. They'll even give it to the Eved Kenani. So they agree that in other years, he can go around and get tzedakah. The problem is in Shnei Batzoret, where there's a limited amount of tzedakah to be given, then what does he do? So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says he's not going to get tzedakah. You got to deal with him. The Adon's got to take care of him. The Chamin say, no, he'll get tzedakah like he gets any other year or like anybody else gets, and you do not have to deal with him. So that is the way that they're going to explain that. Machloket, the Rivam over here brings up a problem from Pidyon Shvuim. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel and the Chachamim have the exact opposite views, which is when someone redeems an Eved Kenani from Shivya, what is the din of that Eved Kenani? Is he go free, or does he become the slave of the person who redeemed him? And their positions there are just the opposite, because there, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, you redeem him and he goes free. Whereas the Chachamim believe that you redeem him and you get to keep him. Why? Because the Chachamim say, in order to incentivize someone to do Pinyon Shvuim, you have to give them a benefit on the back end. What's the benefit? That they get to keep the slave. Shimon Gamliel says, no, people do Pinyon Shvuim because that's the right thing to do. And they'll do it even for an Eved Kenani. So the Rivam points out that there's a difference between the two cases, because Pidyon Shvuim involves a large sum of money versus tzedakah, which is small amounts. Pidyon Shvuim over there is being done by one individual. Over here, the tzedakah can be split up amongst many people. It can beg from door to door. So there are differences between them where you could see them having different opinions. For instance, the fact that he's chayav in mitzvot and that he is a Jew, people view that as being worthy enough to take him out of Pidyon Shvuim, where he's going to be lost to Gamrei. This is over here where they'll say someone else will give him, someone else will take him, or his master will take care of him. So there are reasons to distinguish, and that's why they might have a different opinion by Pidyon Shvuim than they have here by Tzedakah during Shnei Batzoret. Right, so now the Gemara says, Tashma. So the Gemara is still searching for this opinion that says that you have the ability to have a relationship where the Adon can say, Masedayim to me, Mizonot are your problem. So let's say, Damarav, Hamagdish Yudei Abdo, someone who's Magdish, the output of his slave, Oto Eved Love Velchel Vose Uporeya. That Eved has to borrow money in order to eat, then his production will go to repay the loan. Because otherwise, if he doesn't borrow, whatever he makes belongs to Hekdesh. And if it belongs to Hekdesh, then he doesn't have what to take care of himself with. Or he has no way to provide himself mizanot. Shma mina. From here you see, Yechol Rav Lomar Le Eved Asimi Veni Zancha. Because basically that's what's happening here. He was Makdish's output, so his output doesn't belong to the Eved anymore, yet he doesn't get Mizonot. If he doesn't get Mizonot, that's why he has to go through this whole patent over here in order to borrow money in order to get his Mizonot. So Hekdesh doesn't have a first right on the object, but the creditors have the first right to collect over here, and that's why he's able to do this. Why did you just say to the master, feed him? Must be that you can't ask the master to feed him, and that shows this type of relationship over here. Now, he has to say it in this manner. Tosafot discusses this. Other Rishonim discuss this. If he's Makdish Eved, his Eved goes free. Because we say that nobody's Makdish and Eved. What he meant when Makdish was that he was setting him free. So it has to be said in this manner because he has to be Makdish the hands of the Eved. Because you need a Davar Shibali Olam in order for the Shvuah to be Chal. And number two is it can't be the whole Eved, because if you give away the whole Eved, he goes free. And it does not, we don't look at it as being Hekdesh anymore, but rather freeing of the slave. So it said specifically in the Amakdish Yedei Abdo. That's how he says it. Hachama Eskinan, V'malei Lo Mizonot. Now it's a case where the Adon is giving him Mizonot. Iochi, Lamai, Love, Vochel. So then why is he borrowing money in order to eat? If his master is taking care of him, why does he have to borrow money to eat? Mar says, ahadafa, for excess, to get extra food. He has basic mizonot, which he gets from his master, but he wants more. He wants more mizonot. So Mar says, v'lemele hekdesh. Hekdesh, now, who's the owner of his output, should be able to say to this Eved, ad hashta sagilacha belo hadafa. Until now, your master gave you food, and that sufficed, and you didn't have to do anything else. So too now, you should just eat the minimal amount that you need, and that's it. Why all of a sudden now do you need to eat more, and it's on our cheshbon of Hekdesh? So it says, Hekdesh gufei nechile. For Hekdesh, it is also beneficial. So because then it will take up its value, or he'll have more output or production. Hekdesh here only has one value, and that is the output or production of this Eved. They don't own the Eved. They don't have any rights inside of the Eved, but rather they only have one relationship or right, and that is his output. And his output belongs to them, then what they would like to see is that the Eved is as strong as possible and is the most productive because that gives them value. So here, even though normally the Adon didn't give him Hadafa, that's because the Adon can make that decision. He gives him his Zonot, he gets what he gets back, and that's it. That's the relationship. By Hekdesh, the only thing they're getting is the output, and maybe they're willing to invest in the Eved to make him stronger so that he's worth more or that he produces more, and then they get more back in the back end. I mean, it's a long-term decision that helps them out, and it's to their value. Now, why Hekdesh over here can't say the same thing the Adon says? If you believe that the Adon has a right to say to him, give me your Masa Yadayim, and I will not pay you Mizonot, why doesn't Hekdesh say the same thing to him now? Give us your Masa Yadayim, and we're not going to pay you Mizonot. How come Hekdesh can't make that relationship or build that relationship? The Adon can do it, why can't Hekdesh do it? So the answer to that is one of two possibilities. One possibility is that Hekdesh doesn't own him. Hekdesh doesn't own him, it only owns his output. And they're not owning him, they don't have a right to make such a deal. He's still owned by his master, his Adon. His Adon is the master over him. And in that case, they can't make the deal because they don't have sufficient ownership in order to do that. The other possibility is that, is what Tosfot suggests over here, is that Hekdesh nechelesh lo yamut avdo birav. That Hekdesh doesn't want the Eved to die from starvation. So again here, the Hekdesh's value out of this Eved is the output of the Eved. That's the only value that they have here. And if he dies, then they have nothing. So why would they want to have the Eved die and then have nothing left afterwards or get no production? I mean, they have an annuity in his production. In order to maintain that annuity, they want the Eved to stay alive and to give him to eat. And so therefore, they're not going to make a deal where he basically is either going to have to run around begging at the doors and not be productive, or that he's going to starve to death, because then they lose the annuity that they were granted by this Adon. So one of those two reasons, Hekdesh does not make such a deal with the Eved over here. Either because they don't have sufficient mastery over the Eved in this case, they only own his output, not him. Or because the value of the annuity is only there if he's alive and if he's being fed. And so Hekdesh has a vested interest in seeing this Eved being fed in order to get the annuity that comes out. If they don't feed him, then they don't get the annuity, and then Hekdesh loses. And so there's no value to them in doing that. All right, now the Gemara says, Ose uporeya. How could this Eved produce and then pay back the creditors? Hekdesh had the first right here because he was Makdish, the output of his Eved. Afterwards, he borrows money, and now the creditors have a lien on his output because he borrowed money from them. But they are secondary to Hekdesh's claim. That means as he produces, whatever he produces turns into Hekdesh. And once it's Hekdesh, you can't use Hekdesh to pay off the creditors. So how is that working over here? Kama, kama, kodishle. As he produces, it becomes kadosh. My answer is, but pachot, pachot, mishave pruta. Either he sells off, he makes his money, however it is that he does it, he only produces at less than a shave pruta, because less than a shave pruta does not have Hekdesh associated with it. So now, that is not such a simple concept. Rashi over here says, the lo chai chayol Hekdesh pachot mishave pruta. Hekdesh does not impact in less than a shave pruta. That is problematic from two standpoints. Tosafot already raises one of those issues, which is that Rabbi Yitzchak says that you find in the Mishnah in Bava Metzia that there are chamesh prutot. There are five halachot that revolve around the pruta. And one of them in that list is not Hekdesh. If this is true, then less than a shave pruta and above a shave pruta have a huge nafka mean in Hekdesh. Less than a shave pruta is not Hekdesh. Above a shave pruta is Hekdesh. It should have been listed in that Mishnah. In addition, the Gemara in Milah says that one is not chayav in Milah for pachot mishave pruta. One is not chayav for misappropriating Hekdesh if the amount is less than a pruta. That means that first of all, Hekdesh does have ownership, or there is Hekdesh under a shave pruta. You're just not chayav in Milah. So both of those would indicate that there is Hekdesh less than a shave pruta. So therefore, how does it work over here that less than a shave pruta is not Hekdesh? So the Ri says, Omari, d'achainu taima shem b'dato shel makdish yachola pachot mishave pruta. It's not a firm halacha that anything less than a shave pruta is not Hekdish. The halacha is that someone who is Makdish, or someone who interacts with objects, is not Makdish less than a Shavu Puta. That's not what he has in mind. He only has in mind to be Makdish things that are of value. What's of value? That is a Shavu Puta. So he says it's the mindset of the Makdish, not a deficit in Hekdesh, having the ability to make something Hekdesh less than a Shavu Puta. That's one way to deal with it, because then it's not definitive halacha that you would include in the Mishnah above a Metziah. And it's true that you can have Hekdesh less than a Shavu Puta. I mean, that if you have an whole item that was Hekdesh and you slowly move it down to smaller and smaller pieces, then that small piece will be Hekdesh and Shapacha Meshavu Puta. It's all about the moment of Hekdesh. When you make it Hekdesh, at that moment, people normally will not make things that are Hekdesh that are not a Shavu Puta. And the Meiri has an extension of that idea, and the Tosavot says that the Adon only has rights in the Masei Yadayim of his Eved at a Shavu Puta, because he has monetary rights there. And something's only considered mamon when it's Shavu Puta. So it can only be makdish, that which he owns. He only owns things that are Shavu Puta and above. On the other hand, there are others that suggest that pocha mi Shavu Puta being hekdesh is only a din der rabbanon. And over here, the rabbanon waived the hekdesh of pocha mi Shavu Puta in order that the Eved has a way to support himself or supply himself, because otherwise, there's no way that he's going to survive in this circumstance. All right, so Mar says, achanami mistabra. This explanation about Rav makes sense. Dama Rav, a Magdish de Abdo, person who's Magdish, the output of his Eved, Eved Osev Ochel. The Eved is able to produce for himself and eat. Dilo Abdo, Man Palechle. Because if he doesn't do it, who's going to do it for him? Who's going to provide for him? This guy is on his own now. His Adon's certainly not going to pay him anymore, give him his own oath, because he no longer gets anything from the Eved. On the other hand, if he gives all his Messiah the Adayim to Hekdesh, then Hekdesh has to provide him Mizonot. Hekdesh didn't obligate themselves to give him Mizonot. So we say is that he must have to be able to do and eat. Now, obviously, the responsibility is not going to be on Hekdesh to feed him, because despite the fact that they're getting his Messiah Adayim, they still don't own the Eved. And since they don't own the Eved, we can't make them the responsible party for feeding the Eved. And so that's why Mon Polichle is not going to be Hekdesh. Yamar Bishlama. Now, if you explain these two Memorot in Rav in this way, Hach b'male ve'enu yachol, Hach b'she'enu male shapir. You can differentiate these cases by saying this. In a case where he's ma'ale, that he gives him mizonot, and enu yachol, he doesn't have a right to cut off the mizonot. Whereas the second case is where he doesn't give him mizonot, shapir. The explanation makes sense. We have two Memorot of Rav. One memra of Rav, which says that if you makdish the output of your Eved, then the Eved has to borrow in order to eat. The other case is here, where the Rav is makdish the Masei Yadayim of the Eved, and then the Eved can use his own Masei Yadayim in order to pay for it. So what the Gemara says is, if you explain these two cases as being, what Rav said before is, b'malei melo mizonot, he was giving him mizonot, and the Rav doesn't have a right to cut off his mizonot. Over here is a case where he had to deal with him. Masei Yedecha is for your mizonot. He was supplying himself over here his own mizonot. And therefore, when the Rav is Magdish that, he can't be Magdish that which the Eved owns. The Eved owns his Masei Yedayim because that's what provides him mizonot. And so over here, he continues to provide himself mizonot. So the difference between the two cases is, in one case, the Rav, the Adon, is giving him mizonot. In one case, he's not giving him mizonot. But in both cases, the Adon does not have the right to cut him off from his mizonot. So therefore, in the first case, where he is giving him mizonot, and then he's makdish yadayim, then he has to borrow, because otherwise everything is hekdesh. And the Adon is giving him mizonot. Ah, what is he dealing with? He's dealing with the hadafa, the excess that's above the normal mizonot. In our case, why is it that his masei yadayim can be used and then not hekdesh? Because he owns his masei yadayim here, the Eved. The Eved had to deal with the Adon, that he's going to use his own masei yadayim for his mizonot. In neither case do you see the Adon giving the right to cut him off from his mizonot. In the first case, he's giving him his mizonot. In the second case, he's not giving him his mizonot. But in the second case, he has his Masei Yadayim. In the first case, he doesn't. Again, you don't see anything from Rav's Shita in that way. Ela Iyamart, if you say, Hach b'she'enu male, it's a case where he doesn't give him his mizonot. V'yachon, he's allowed to cut him off. Dilo Avda, man polichle? Then over here, how are you going to explain this? That if he doesn't do for himself, who's going to give to him? Man dabai nifleche. Whoever wants to give him, will give him. What precludes him from getting mizonot over here? I mean, they can beg at the doorways. He can do whatever he wants. Why is that the problem over here? Now, again, if he owns his own mizonot and his ma'ase yadayim, then he can control his ma'ase yadayim and keep the mizonot. And that's why the adon doesn't have enough ownership in order to be magdish his ma'ase yadayim. Whereas if you say that the adon has a right to take away his ma'ase yadayim and still say you're on your own for your mizonot, then in this case, what do you mean man polichle? Who's going to work for him? Nobody has to work for him. That's the whole deal. The whole deal is that you have a right to take the slaves, ma'ase yadayim, and say you're on your own for your mizonot. That's the whole concept in this structure, or in this mastery that the adon has over here. So then, why are you worried about the slave? That's the normal relationship that a slave has with his master. You can say, ma'ase yadayim are mine, mizonot, you're on your own. So how could the Gemara ask? Man polichle, who's going to take care of him? There is no taking care of him. This is the way that a slave has to deal. He has to go and take care of himself. So the same way he has to take care of himself in the normal relationship, let him take care of himself now when the adon is makdish de ma'ase yadayim. The fact that this statement of Rav says, who's going to take care of him now, makes it suggest that until now he was taken care of. How is he taken care of? Because he takes care of himself. His own ma'ase yadayim pays mizonot, and if his ma'ase yadayim are going to the adon's giving him mizonot. That's indicative of a relationship that says he is taken care of. And if it's indicative of that relationship, Elav Shmamina, Inu Yachol Shmamina. That shows you that the relationship between an Adon and an Eved is such that the Adon has to take care of the Eved. Either by giving him his own oath or by allowing his own Ma'aseh Yadayim to take care of his own oath. And from Rav you see that it's not possible to set up a relationship where the Adon takes the Ma'aseh Yadayim and the Eved gets nothing. Right, very good. So what you'd have to say over here is that he's makdish the hadafa. That case of Rav, where he's makdish, he can't maybe makdish the core ma'aseh yadayim, because the ma'aseh yadayim belong to the Eved to provide his own mizonot. So what the Adon can do is be makdish the hadafa. The excess he will be able to be makdish, and you can say the same havamina that you had before, which was, you have a havamina that the hadafa should belong to the Eved because he'll have deficits at times. So maybe it should belong to the Eved, kamash malan, that the Adon has a right to be makdish that hadafa, even though the Eved might run into deficits in different periods. Alright, so now, Tashma, we have an opposing opinion to Rav, and that is Dama Rabbi Yochanan. Hakutei Yadav Doshel Chaveiro, someone who severs the arm of his friend's slave, notein shifto urefuato the rabo. He gives his unemployment and his medical bills to his master. Voto Evid nizon min etztaka. And that Evid gets his mizonos from tztaka because he's no longer providing Masayadayim to the Adon, and the Adon can say to him, take care of yourself, you're on your own for your mizonot. So now, Rashi and Tosafot point out that with regards to Shevet and Ripui, that you actually chayav the Chameshet Advarim, and you have to pay for everything, which is Nezek, Tzar, Shevet, Ripui, and Boshet, you have to pay all of these things. But, as Tosafot points out, by Nezek and Tzar and Boshet, it's clear that that belongs to the master. Because the Eved is the slave of the master, and then anything happens to the slave, in terms of his ownership, he's like property, the master, it'll definitely go to the master. Shifto, also, here we're going to see in a second, Shifto and Refuato, here is where you have the question. Because Shifto, if he can't work anymore, and the master is going to tell him, get your own mizonot, maybe Shifto should belong to the Eved. That's where Rabbi Yochanan says, no, that you have a right to set up a relationship where you get the value of his work output, and the Eved has to go find his own mizonot. Refuato, we're going to see in a second what the Chiddush is here. Rashi says that they're subsumed under the words here that Tzaro is Bichlal Refuato and Nizko is in Tzaro are part of the Shifto. Either way, if you say they're subsumed under these terms or you say it's obvious in the other ways, it's not to say that only these two. The reason he brought these two is because there's a Chiddush in these two items. And that is Shmamina, Yechol Rav Lomar Le'Eved Aseimi Veini Zancha. From Yochanan, it's clear you can have a relationship in which you take all the output of the value of the Eved and you give him no mizonot. Hacha, b'mayiskin, and Gemara says, no, maybe not. B'mala lo mizonot. Maybe this is a case where the Adon is providing mizonot. Yochi amay nizon min etztaka. So then why is he getting, going to etztaka to get his mizonot? L'hadafa, for his excess. Yochi nizon mit parnes mi boyilei. First of all, that doesn't work because then the terminology you should use is not mizonot means core basic necessities. Mit parnes means above your core basic necessities. So here, if you're talking about hadafa, that which is in excess of his core necessities to eat, and he wants a little more food, that you would call mitparnes min etztaka, not nizon min etztaka. El alav shmamina, yachol shmamina. So from there you could see that you can't have such a relationship, and the Adon can basically say, all the money is coming to me, and you, Evet, you're on your own now, you gotta get your own mizonot, and Rabbi Yochanan argues on Rav, and says you can't set up such a relationship. Amamar. Now the Gemara goes back to discuss this in more detail, that which Rabbi Yochanan said. Notein shifto refuato l'rabo. Shifto pshita. Shifto makes sense that it goes to the Adon, because the output of the Evet belongs to the Adon. I mean, the chiddush is that he doesn't get mizonot in return for that. Now, even though we do learn from this statement about Rabbi Yochanan that he can say, asei mi v'ani zancha, but you wouldn't have to give this whole example just to do that. Say it straight out. The fact that he says it in this convoluted manner of kotei yado shel eved shel achirim shows you that there must be some chiddush within this itself. And shifto is certainly not the chiddush, because of course, it actually says shifto goes to the Adon. Or, again, like Tosafot says over here, Shifto, if that was the only chiddush that we had here, then we wouldn't need him to say it this way. Just say, Harei Yaseyimi Beni Zancha, and you would have known that information. The fact that he cloaked it in this way says that there must be some other chiddush here, and it's not in Shevet, it must be in the Tzad Refuah. Refuato, it's Trichale. On the other hand, Refuah is a chiddush here. Refuato, Didehu, Dibayit Suyebe. Why should the medical bills, or value of the medical bills, go to the Adon? He has to use that money to cure the Eved. So why shouldn't the money go directly to the doctors rather than to the Adon? The Adon is just passing the money through to the doctor. So why doesn't this person just pay the doctors directly? That they assess them for 5 days. I mean, they would take 5 days to cure this illness, and you'll need a doctor or medical attention for 5 days. And they got him this super drug. And he was cured or healed within 3 days. Now, that comes at a cost. There's no way that you found a better drug and he's healed faster, but rather, he was willing to undergo more pain that caused the healing to happen faster. So now the Eved, in exchange for the cure, or the faster cure, takes on more pain over here. Madhutema, what I would thought, Saradidehu. That's a decision of the Eved. The Eved himself is making a decision that I'm willing to undergo more pain to be cured faster. So then maybe that differential in the medical bill should come to him. They awarded him 5 days of medical attention. He only needs 3 days of medical attention, but the difference is made up by the pain that he undergoes to get the 3 days. So who does that excess 2 days of medical value go to? So you would have thought it goes to the Eved, because the Eved underwent the pain personally to get it the faster. The answer in the end is no. Refuato le kamash malan, that it goes to his Adon. It goes to his master anyway, because in the end, the tsar belongs to the master as well. And so the tsar that he undergoes doesn't give him any more rights or ownership in the money here, and everything goes to his master. Just in conclusion there, we have seemingly a machlok between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan as to whether you can set up such a relationship where the Adon says, Masei Adayim, the output's mine, and I don't feed you mizonot. Rav says you cannot create such a relationship, and therefore you have to explain our Mishnah as a case where he tells him you're on your own, but it's a case where he doesn't have sufficient in his Masei Adayim to make up his mizonot. That's the way you explain our Mishnah, because that'll be different for an Eved than an Isha. By an Eved, he will not have to make up the difference. By an Isha, he will have to make up the difference. Whereas Rabbi Yochanan will say that you can't have such a relationship, and the explanation our Mishnah is a case where he says, Masei Adayim, your output's mine, mizonot, you're on your own, you gotta deal with it. And if that's the case, then when he frees him, there's no detriment to the Eved, because he could lose his mizonot, even if he stays as a slave. And that's the Shita of the Chachamim as to why it's not a kuva to free the slave. Now the Gemara here brings a braita that goes back to our Mishnah about the discussion between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah. The machloka between the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir in the Mishnah is whether a document of emancipation is positive for the Eved or negative for the Eved. The Chachamim see it as being a zchut for the Eved, and Rabbi Meir sees it as being a chova. And as we've been discussing now, why is it a chova? Because he loses the mizonot. What mizonot he loses, again, that's the machloka here between Rav and Rabbi Yochanan. So the Rabbanan say why. According to Rabbi Yochanan, there's no loss because he doesn't get mizonot up front, and he's not going to get mizonot after he is free. For Rav, just like over here, the Adon does not make up the deficit for his Masei Yadayim. So too, when he's freed, he's going to be in the same position. His Masei Yadayim are going to make his mizonot. So it's no different while he's an Eved and while he's not an Eved. It's no difference for him. So Tanya, I'm Rabbi Elazar. Amanu lo the Meir. The Meir here means Rabbi Meir, but it's Meir because Rabbi Elazar is a peer with Rabbi Meir, so he calls him Meir. Isn't it a big schut that the Eved goes free over here? Being a free man is worth a lot, and that is a schut for him. They say, no, it's to his detriment. That's what Rabbi Meir responds. Shemaya Eved Kohen, poslo minat Truma. Because if he was the Eved of a Kohen, then he no longer gets Truma that he could have eaten with his Adon. Amar Nolo. Hello, Ma'im Yirtse Shalol Lizono, Ushalol Lefarneso Rashai. But forget about Truma. He doesn't have to give him his zonot at all. He doesn't have to mefarnes him. Whether according to Rabbi Yochanan, that means he doesn't have to mefarnes him at all. Or according to Rabbi, he just gives him, says, your Masai Daim, take care of it. He has to make up any shortfall. Amar Lanu, he responds to us. My ilu Eved Kohen Shibarach, Ve'eshid Kohen Shemardah Ba'alah. If you have an Eved Kohen who runs away from his master, or a woman who runs away from her husband, Alo Ochlim B'Truma. As long as they're still married, or they're still owned by the owner, they have a right to Truma. So, v'zein uchol, v'zein uchel. And now when you either get divorced or you free him, he can no longer eat. But so there's a big difference here between him being under the ownership and not under the ownership. And you're telling me he can cut off his food? He can just run away. If he runs away, he can get the Truma from anywhere he wants and it'll be fine. Tosafot mentions that Truma is cheaper, plus there's a mitzvah in Achila Truma. So then you have two benefits. As a slave, he can go supply himself with cheaper food, and he can do a mitzvah in eating of Truma. So why would he want to give up those items? So Tosafot says the Havamina of the Chachamim was that when Rabbi Meir was talking about Truma, that they thought he was saying that it's a benefit for him to be the Eved of a Kohen because Truma is cheaper. And therefore the Kohen is going to provide him more mizonot than he would have when he goes free because he can't buy Truma anymore. Rabbi Meir comes back and says to them, no, not only in that situation. Even without the Adon paying for his mizonot, and the Eved is taking care of his own mizonot, there's a value because he can eat Truma. And he can provide Truma for himself, which is cheaper. Aval Isha Chovula. On the other hand, for a woman, it is a Chov. She came Pasla min a Truma. Because then she loses out on Truma, or Mafsida min a mizonot. And she loses out on mizonot. That's the Shita of the Chachamim. This statement about the woman, that there's an obligation there, Rashi says it's referencing the Shita of the Chachamim, and that the Chachamim are saying that that's the difference between an Eved and an Isha. Other hand, Tosafot says that this is Rabbi Meir's statement and saying that the Eved has an equation of equality with the Isha, and there's an obligation in both of those instances. Whereas there are even others who say that it's the Shita of Rabbi Elazar here, which is that Rabbi Elazar is saying that the Chachamim and Rabbi Meir don't argue about an Isha because it is Chov Hu. It's an obligation on the husband to provide mizonot for the wife. So, my kam rulei, o my kam ahadiluhu. We have here headlines, but we don't have exactly what happened in the conversation. So, the Gemara here explains it. Hachi kam aluhu. He says, Heshivotuni ala mizonot. You responded to me with regards to mizonot. I agree that with regards to mizonot, you're right, because the Adon can pull the plug on the Eved, and if he can pull the plug on the Eved, he's no worse off when he is enslaved than when he's a free person, because either way, he can lose his mizonot, again, whether it's Rav or Rabbi Yochanan Shita. Ma tishivuni ala truma. What are you going to do with regards to the truma? Because truma has a loss for the Eved, because while he's enslaved, he can eat the truma. When he's freed, he can't eat the truma. Wait a minute. What are you going to say to me? That the Adon can free his slave against his will. And so since he can free him against his will, he can take away his right to Truma. He can just throw the document of emancipation into him, and if it lands within four amot of the Eved, he's done. And as Tosfot asks over here, points out, even though you're right that the Adon can force him to be freed against his will, still when the Shliach accepts on behalf of this individual, he's accelerating this process, and it is to his detriment. So why should it work? So what Tosfot in the end says, somewhat along the lines of what the Gemara is going to answer in the end, is that the Adon has many ways where he can be posel him from the Truma or move this ability of the Eved to eat the Truma. And therefore, the Shliach's not doing anything that the Adon himself couldn't do immediately. And therefore, it's no more of a chovah, the fact that he accepts it now, than if it waits until the receipt of the document of emancipation by the Eved himself. So that Rabbi Meir says, Shaviklei Varik. He'll leave his master and run away so that he can't sever the relationship. Vazal Alma, he'll be somewhere else and he'll get his truma, and it will be to his detriment if he gets free. Cause, ma ilu eved kohen shibarach, veish kohen shimerda al bala, hello, ocheim bitruma. Because even if they are running away or runaways or they are rebelling, they're still entitled to truma because they're kinyan kaspo of the kohen. Vazayin ochel. This guy doesn't get to eat because he is now freed, and he's no longer the Eved of the Kohen. So there is a detriment to him, and the Gemara says, Shapir Kamaluhu. Rabbi Meir has a good taina against the Chachamim. Why did the Chachamim going to answer that? So Amar Rava, Hanukkah the Mahadri Lebe Matznitin. That's what they answer him in the Mishnah. Mipnei shu kinyano. This is not a right, but a result of him being an eved. His truma, or the fact that he can eat truma, is not a right or an entitlement of an eved. It's simply the result of him being owned by the kohen. It's kinyan kaspo, and that's why it is. Dish bai shokel arba azuzei miyisrael upasiyule kohecha deite. Because you know what the owner of the slave can do? He can just sell him. He can sell him to Israel. And as soon as he sells him to Israel, he's no longer ra'ui to get truma. So the kohen can pull the plug on him even without freeing him. He can just simply sell him to a party that doesn't grant him truma. He'll sell him to Israel. So he remains an eved, and he can do it not in the presence of the eved, so the truma is not his. It's not his right. It's a byproduct of the ownership, and the adon can change that ownership anytime he wants. And since that's the case, when you free him, you haven't caused him any detriment, the adon can do the same two things to him while he's still an eved, and hand him over to someone else. Tosafot asked that question on the previous amud, and says, how can you then allow an eved or an isha to ever get truma or eat truma? Because you can always have a safek that something was severed in their relationship, or that their relationship changed in some way. Either the husband died, or that the adon sold the eved to Israel, and he's no longer entitled to truma. So Tosafot says over here, Lamar Glo Shkiach Shiknei Israel Mechar Shebarach. He says, he can do it, but the likelihood of this happening is very low, because he ran away. Which Israel is going to buy an Eved that's not here? He's not going to get the guy back. It's not worth the money to buy him. So for that reason, he says that it's not a likely occurrence, and we're not going to be choshish for that in giving them Truma. On the other hand, he does have the right to do it, and it can happen. That right in itself is enough to deal with the fact that it's not a detriment for him to go free, because that right to truma can be severed even before that, or even while he's still a slave, by having him sold to Israel. So now Gemara says, Ula Rabbi Meir, according to Rabbi Meir, this is your question, Shaul, Tinach, Eved Kohen. Okay, his explanation's great for an Eved Kohen. Eved Israel, Ma'ikul Meimar. Then what's the detriment for an Eved Israel being sold out? He doesn't have entitlement to truma, doesn't have entitlement to mizonot. What's the downside of him going free? He's much better off if he goes free. So I'm Rabbi Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzchak, Mipnei Shemasidu Mishivcha Knanit. Because he can no longer be married to a Shivcha Knanit. Or says, Adraba, Hari Matiroba Bat Chorin. Now he can marry a free woman. He can marry a regular Israelite now. He's exchanging. He can't have a Shivcha Knanit, but he can have an Israelite. He much better off getting to a Bat Chorin. He says, this is Rabbi Meir Shita, Avda Behefkeira Nechale. The Eved likes this free lifestyle better. Zilale, Shchichale, Pritzale. It's available to him. He can treat her any way he wants. The pritzut is available. Meaning that there's no real obligation here. With the Shivcha Kananit, his adon controls it, first of all. And number two is, it's a relationship where he can treat her any way he wants. There's not a husband-wife relationship over here. There are no real obligations on him. And in terms of, right, in terms of Kedushin, and as he says, Solalehi Be'inav L'Zazumba Kol Tabato. He can treat her any way he wants. He'll just satisfy his needs. I mean, this is a very base view, but he is an Eved. And an Eved in that situation enjoys a freewheeling life and not having to worry about any of those responsibilities. On the other hand, if he goes to a Bat Chorin, there's responsibilities. That's the view of Rabbi Meir. The Chachamim say, still, he'd much rather be free. And even though there is a curtailment in this lifestyle, he gets to marry a Bat Chorin. He has more choices. He can live a regular lifestyle. He can be responsible for himself. And he'd rather lead a life of responsibility. A person wants to feel good about themselves and have a life of responsibility and proper relationships than simply being a freewheeler. And therefore, there is a schut to the Eved, whereas Rabbi Meir views this as being a detriment. Now, Tosfot points out that even Rabbi Meir will have to agree with an Eved Katan that it's a schut for him. Because an Eved Katan doesn't have the tava of the biyah and pritzut, and therefore there's no detriment to him being freed. And so Tosfot says over here, that would have to be that Rabbi Meir would agree in that case. Okay, we'll stop here by the Mishnah on the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph.